You're listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves.
Welcome to Atlanta Baseball Talk, show number 335. Today is Sunday, May 29th, and my name is Steve. I am joined by Hamilton. And Hammy, in tonight's show, you and Kurt sit down with Braves chairman and CEO Terry McGuirk. We talk about the Olivera suspension and Tehran's two battery mates. But first, a quick break.
Welcome back, and we are very excited to welcome the chairman and CEO of the Atlanta Braves, Mr. Terry McGuirk. Terry, welcome to Atlanta Baseball Talk.
Glad to be on with you. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Yes, we are as well. And so we want to talk to you tonight, Terry, about the new stadium and all the plans there, as well as the team. But before we do that, I want to talk about you first, and I'd like to start with this. So it's funny, the internet has some conflicting dates, but I'm going to go with 1973. Some people say 72. You graduated, but I'll go with those, make you younger in this story. You graduate from Middlebury College, and you become an account executive at WTCG in Atlanta, and which, for those of you who don't know, became the Superstation, and then WTBS, and then TBS, and I guess PCH-TV in some regards. And then I want to fast forward all the way to 1996, and while it was maybe a year that a lot of Braves fans don't want to remember, in spite of our run to the World Series, you were elected into the Cable Hall of Fame. So Terry, how does a guy go from being an account executive straight out of college to being inducted into the Hall of Fame? What were some of the highlights of those 24 years for you during that period?
Well, you're starting me back in the beginning and far away from Braves baseball, but it actually connects. And I did start in 72 as a summer intern with.
There you go.
It was a broken down UHF television station, and that's before your time. But UHF television was the French Foreign Legion of the television business back then, and no one could get it over the air. And it's only. The only way you could really make anything of it was on cable TV, and that was the intersection of Ted Turner, WTCG, and my career as we got involved with cable to try and keep this thing alive and growing. And the first sort of breakthrough was 1974 when we, 76 when we bought the Braves. And simultaneously went on the satellite with TBS to, at that point, TBS, to go to really southeastern cities, which were not able to be reached with terrestrial microwaves. The satellite was looked at as a way to sort of, you know, jump to Charleston and Mobile and Tallahassee. It was sort of an amazing factor that first night when really 50 states started picking up TBS and the rest was history, but the Braves rode along as part of that and on to history.
So let's pick up with the Braves. So starting in 96, or actually starting in 91, I guess, you became, and correct my facts here, you became sort of the second in command to the chairman, Mr. Turner, and then in 96 took those responsibilities over for him fully. And but basically saying you were there for the glory days, that magical run, 14 straight division titles. So, you know, we've had the players on. We've had players talk about the highlights from that. But from your perspective, it's sort of being in the, you know, the front office. How would you describe that period of the 90s? What are some of your fond memories, and what was it like to be part of that organization then?
Well, it's interesting, and it sort of mirrors a little bit of what the world is showing us today with the Braves. Coming out of the late 80s, we were dismal. Bobby Cox had joined the front office as general manager. We were compiling a list, you know, a cadre of great young players, but they had not seen the higher levels of our minor league system. And Glavin and Smoltz were just arriving, and they were not much to look at. Their records were pretty dismal, too. And the whole thing sort of clambered into the end of 1990. And at that point, the team reported directly to me on a day-to-day basis. And I remember some of the calls with John Schuerholz as we tried to lure him from Kansas City over. These were dark days in the Braves organization. You know, we had high hopes for all the talent, but not much was really showing at that point. Well, John came over, I think, in October of 90, and Bobby went somewhere in that, just prior to the end of the season, went down to become day-to-day manager, and one of the first things I remember John did when he got here was he looked at our infield, and we had some good pitching, but ground balls didn't really do much for our pitchers because they were bobbling around and hitting guys in the faces. It was a very bad field. So we hired Ed Magnin at that time, and the field became one of the best in baseball the next year. John looked at the organization. We had a lot of we had some left-handed pitchers. So we were going to see some right-handed batters, and the left side of our infield looked pretty weak from a defensive standpoint. So presto, Terry Pendleton and Belliard show up. They needed somebody to throw it to, and all of a sudden we had a first baseman. And that was sort of the way it was sort of organically done, that John sort of built the pieces that we were missing, and who knew? We were 9 games out or something at the All-Star break in 91, and ended up winning the division. So it was magical.
Yeah.
Well, looking at the team now, remembering those days, it seems almost reflective of what's happening now with the team that we're seeing on the field now, the team that's struggling, but it's a lot of young players that are coming up. How would you describe this experience now from your perspective?
Well, we've been around a long time. We've seen the ups and downs of baseball. You never get there in baseball by staying in the middle. You have to get, certainly Kansas City and Chicago, the Mets, Houston, all of them have broken down the organization to start at the bottom, build up from the bottom up, building from the top down, as a couple of teams, couple of big market teams have done, is really fool's gold, and it never is sustainable. You have to have, in modern baseball, a great minor league system. I'm sure you're aware of the fact that we've, in really 18 months, we've gone from like a bottom five minor league system to either the number one, two, or three, depending on whether it's ESPN or Baseball America making the judgment, and we're very proud of that transition. But to us, that's just the beginning, because we know as we bring the latest crop of players through the system, you need to replenish and keep building that that next wave. And that's what we have, a wonderful draft coming up. We have 5 picks out of the first 80, and we have a number of international signings that we have in mind for the coming summer. And we expect that we're going to reload again. And that's sort of the coin of the realm. You have to keep putting those great young players in at the bottom of the system and let them run through it and learn the Braves way, and then they matriculate to the major league club.
So it sounds like you're pretty happy, you're pretty satisfied with the way the rebuilding process is going so far.
Oh, I think it's going fantastically. I couldn't be prouder of the job Coppy and John Hart are doing, and I think we're way ahead of schedule. It certainly is, you have to almost overlook, you know, look past this start. We're just not ready to bring enough players up. We're trying to let everybody grow organically, mature in a baseball way on their time, and then there'll be a time when they'll come to the majors. But we are very pleased with the talent. We probably have more talent at the middle to lower level right now than we do at the higher level, but we have enough at the higher level that I think by the end of this year and into early next year, it's going to make a tremendous difference. It doesn't preclude us from going into the market for players, which we feel very strongly that we will do in the off season. When we open up the new ballpark next year, we hope to sort of have that marriage of some players that we acquire in the marketplace with all of these young people that we'll try and have ready starting next year.
So, Terry, one of the pieces of that sort of next chapter is a manager. And obviously, Freddie was just let gone. So, could you speak about that, letting Freddie go, but also where's your mind and Copy's and Hart's mind now in terms of this next manager? You know, a lot of people are throwing out names all the way from Bud Black or, a sort of a marquee manager. On the other hand, the Braves' way all the way back to Chuck Tanner has been promoting from within. So talk about the Freddie move, but then also talk about if you guys, where's your strategy about a new coaching hire at this point?
Well, first of all, I'd like to pay the appropriate respect to Freddie Gonzalez, who we love, and he was a fabulous guy personally, did an amazing service for this organization, and is loved across the organization. We just needed a different voice, and it was just time for a change, and professional athletics are rough in that way, and but it was the right move. Even Freddie knew that it was the right move, and but he is beloved around here, and he is a great gentleman, and is always welcome as part of our family. Snit is an old veteran here at the Braves, and was able to step right in. I think our hope is that we have a quote national search at the end of the year. We have some great internal candidates, I don't want to limit any by naming any of them by, sure. But we have enough internal candidates that it almost looks like a national search. But we're going to compare everything that we need to compare to make sure that we have the right guy to relate and grow this team of young players in this organization of, John Hart, Copy, John Schuerholz, Bobby Cox, and all the very experienced baseball hands here. We're gonna make the right decision. I have no doubt about that. And it's an exercise to be done.
Yeah.
Well, going back to what you mentioned about the payroll, obviously you guys are going to have a lot of new revenue streams coming with the new stadium. And not that you would tell us kind of where the payroll is going to go, but I assume that you guys think that you'll have a pretty – I mean, given that the on-field payroll this year is about $50 million, and that comes with obviously young players as well, but do you think that there'll be a pretty substantial increase in the payroll next year, bringing guys in to fill some gaps on the team?
I'm sorry. You said the payroll is $50 million.
Well, I think that's the on-field payroll, the players, because I know that we've got Michael Bourne and Nick Swisher and people like that that are still part of payroll. But I think the on-field payroll.
You know, we're over $100 million in as far as how baseball evaluates the payroll this year. But a lot of it is not performing on the field as you. Correctly assessed, and but even what is performing on the field, I think, is in my you know, my numbers are bigger than yours, but I would hope that almost all of the money would be on the field next year, and that the payroll would be higher, and that we would not have any dead money. So those are sort of guidelines, I think, as we approach 17.
And so you said, you know, it's funny, as a Braves fan, there was a quote from John Malone, and I don't think he meant this in a bad way, but he goes, you know, the Braves are more of a real estate company now. John Malone, the CEO of Liberty Media, you know, more of a real estate company now than a baseball team, which for people who do a podcast like us was like, wait a minute, what? Is that ever material?
Well, I don't know if that was it. That may not be exactly the quote, but
yep.
I get the gist. And what he was remarking on, it was he was trying to bring some focus on to the value that this huge real estate play is adding to the organization.
And do we? And you? So, as a fan, can we expect to see some of that value actually translate into the product on the field? I guess that's what folks are hoping for or worried about.
Well, I think that everything about what we're doing around the stadium, the new stadium, is designed to enhance every part of our organization. We want our fans to have a much greater game day experience. There's going to be 20 restaurants outside of the stadium where people can come early and stay late, and every kind of restaurant. There's a 4,000 seat music theater that is in the complex. We've got 600 apartments, a hotel, office building, 250,000 feet of retail. There'll be so much to do that all of that will be part of the economic stimulus that goes on around the ballpark. But we have an ownership in pretty much everything that will sit in the Battery, the name of our mixed-use project, and you know, which is almost 1.5 million square feet mm-hmm. of new business. And so it's going to take a while for all this to get open and be profitable, but we expect it to be a good business and something that will allow the Braves to continue to be very fiscally healthy.
Do you get frustrated at all? Perhaps it's tied to the team struggling this year that some of the spotlighting is on things like traffic and things that are still going through the machinations of getting in order for next year, that perhaps we're not focusing on the, like you mentioned, all the fun things, the great aspects, the young players. Maybe those are being overshadowed because of the record of the team this year. I even read in the AJC today that Tim Lee, the chair of the Cobb County Commission, might not win his reelection bid, and they're saying it might be tied in part to the performance on the team this year. Do you think that some of this, that we're missing the broader point here?
Well, there's a lot of exaggeration and also reporting that is serving other interests. That it's very hard. You know, I have to admit, it's very hard to understand what is about to happen out there because it's never existed in sports before. This is going to be one of the great sports wonders of the world. This new complex, and it's hard to describe it, I think, if you're reporting on it, because there's nowhere to go to draw a parallel. Atlanta, if you've been to Atlanta, you know there's traffic everywhere. Probably the worst of it is right downtown where we are, and the particular access points to our present stadium at Turner Field make it very difficult for our fans. And when we survey them, you know, their top concerns and complaints are about parking and traffic. The place where we are going, and if you're going anywhere in Atlanta, has traffic. But there is $1 billion of new traffic improvement going on around the stadium that the state and county and city are doing. And the there are, you know, in the Turner Field, there are two access points and egress points. In the new stadium at SunTrust Park, there will be 14. So there's, not to mention the fact that from what I described before, the spread of arrival and departure will be much more throughout the day as people come early and stay late and do the kinds of things that, whether it's family or a husband, wife, or a bunch of friends, it's a chance to go and socialize. That doesn't exist it exists inside Turner Field, but there's nothing outside Turner Field where you can do that.
So, Terry, this has been great, and I'd like to end with this question. So we've heard it a lot on Twitter. I think you've heard it before. I think I've even heard you address it. But there is this belief that in order for the Braves to really return to the glory days, that we need to return to an ownership model like Ted Turner with you at his side, right? That people cite Arthur Blank and the Falcons, Mark Cuban, right? And they believe that in order to really compete and win in this league, you have to have an owner that is an ego, that has a passion, has a competitive streak, and a do-whatever-it-takes mentality. And in some ways, obviously, Liberty Media doesn't fit that description, but maybe maybe that they don't need to. And so I guess the question is, why do you think Liberty Media is actually the best owner to see the Braves through this transition and take them back to the glory days?
Oh, I definitely think that the model we have is almost ideal because this media company in Denver has put the team in the hands of people that know how to operate it. I am the control person of the team, which is highly unusual, and that we have a staff of senior people here who have, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years of experience and a passion that is unrivaled. And when we lose, nobody sleeps. There is more passion here than we know what to do with, and it sometimes we have to calm it down because of everybody cares so much. The Braves way is something that we preserve and we salute, and nobody is keeping us from doing the ideal, perfect job here other than ourselves. And I couldn't imagine anybody doing a more passionate job. Maybe I could see, owners are owners. If you had one person that I function as the owner. I have the ability to make any changes whatsoever that are necessary. But if somebody wanted to be irrational or do whatever they wanted, it's certainly there. I worked with Ted all the way through the years from the day we first owned the team. Ted was a very pragmatic guy. The Braves prospered greatly as part of a television empire. Ted was larger than life. But interestingly, while Ted gets sort of iconic ownership feel, the company, the Braves, were always owned by a public company. They were never owned personally by Ted. And pretty much all the way back through their Atlanta history, the Atlanta Braves have been owned by a public company, albeit one in Atlanta previously. This one is in a different place. But corporate ownership can be very good. And so I'll leave it at that. And I think we're very satisfied. And I think baseball would tell you also, Rob Manfred and Bud Selig have called this the gold standard franchise throughout their time in dealing with us. And those are compliments that we take to heart. So
absolutely.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, no, that's great. Well, and Terry, thank you. I mean, thank you, first of all, for just your service going back to 1972 and all the hard work you've done for the fans and for the city of Atlanta. Thanks for coming on the show, and good luck with the season. Good luck with the move, the move to the new stadium and all that. And hopefully we look forward to talking to you again sometime soon.
Very good.
So, Ham, good stuff with Terry McGuirk. The one thing that struck me more than anything was his bristling at the $50 million in live money on the field comment from Kurt.
Yeah. And I can see it from his side, right? That is one number to him. I mean, certainly he is managing. That is one way to look at it. It's a bit of a reductionist way to look at it. And I think that that's not what he's managing every day. That's where he's coming from, is he's managing a much larger payroll, and he's still got some legacy contracts and the price of doing baseball and the way the Braves chose to rebuild. That is much more than that $50 million. So I think for him, he's like, you don't judge me on saying what I have on the field, because I'm not just managing that. I could see.
Yeah, I hear you. Don't you think it's a little more of the sort of tone deaf, communication from the front office around – just like, we're going to be much better this year, and it's not really a rebuild, oh, but it is, and, that kind of stuff?
I guess so. I mean, I think last year they were trying to do both, and they were scared about the reputation build, and they knew that there was going to be a PR hit with this move to Cobb, right? And so I think they were trying to maintain, we're not rebuilding. But I think they were rebuilding, and this year they fully embraced it, and it's hard. And they've had some things not go their way. And there's some things that they just, maybe going on. It's not something they want to talk about in public.
Yeah, I guess at 21 games under 500, it's a little harder to not acknowledge the rebuild at this point.
Yeah, he sees it. He sees it, but he certainly doesn't want that. And we're going to talk about Oliveira and stuff like that. But I mean, there's some things that I'm certain he would wish had gone another way as well.
Well, undoubtedly.
Yeah. But he was very gracious, Terry was. He was a super nice guy. And whatever you think about the way that the Braves are operated, he's a really good person. I would say that from talking with him.
Yeah, very nice.
Yeah.
All right, Ham, let's move on to fair or foul, where I throw something out there and we agree with it fair or disagree with it foul. So Major League Baseball finally ruled on Hector Oliveira and his domestic violence arrest. From a few weeks ago, he was given an 82-game suspension, the largest suspension in MLB history for domestic violence. So, Ham, fair or foul, you want to see Hector Oliveira in a Braves uniform again?
No. I won't even build up to the point. I won't bury the lead. I can't imagine ever embracing him as a fan. I feel like I would hate myself if I did. So that's the short answer. And I feel like, the visceralness of this reaction is specific to Oliveira, more so than it would be any other Brave.
Why? What do you mean?
Well, I mean, if Oliveira had been here 3 years already, I feel like, and I don't know why on some reaction, but I was just thinking through, like, Oliveira, if it had been any other Brave, maybe I wouldn't excuse the act. It wouldn't pardon the act, but maybe a little bit more willing to forgive him after he had done his penance. And this for Oliveira, I was like, bad person, don't want him, X him immediately. That was the reaction. Oh my God, I can't believe this. And it was just get rid of him immediately. And I don't know if it would have been that quick for any other Brave. For some reason, Oliveira, it feels like he got it more. And so for me, I want nothing of it. Even if he proves to be a good MLB player and he does bounce back from this, I don't want it to be with the Braves.
Yeah, it gets murky because I'm with you. I do not want to see him. I can't get the phrase visible bruises on the victim's face out of my mind. Like, it's just horrible. But there's part of me that wonders, in the middle of the night, like if Oliveira had followed up his really amazing spring, leading the Grapefruit League and hits for most of it, all this stuff. If he had come in the first month and hit 7 homers and was batting .290, would you feel any different?
Well,
I feel like it's a little easier to be like, it's a little easier.
Well, look at it this way. What if he was, and obviously two completely different people, but what if he'd been here as long as Markakis had been here and had done what you did, had sort of produced, and more importantly, we'd been able to identify with him as fans on a level, which I don't feel like I have yet, right? I didn't know him. This is his first year with the team, and there's all this wrapped up with the Alex Wood and Peraza stuff. And so, if I'd been able to identify him more with him as a fan, I wonder if it's different a little bit.
I'm with you. I mean, I think about Markakis, and frankly, I have no real feelings of connection to Markakis. I'd be like, get him out of here. But if it was Freddie, right? Yeah. Or if a few years ago it was Peter Moylan, you know, McCann, someone that we really, really loved, it would be murkier for me. Well, I hate to admit that, but I have to admit that.
The murky, you wouldn't excuse the act, I think. It would, well, it's, of course. It's your willingness to forgive, I think, is right. Where it might be different, right? I mean, he has to, 82 games. It's just weird putting a number on it. In some ways, that doesn't even feel like enough, you know? Like, it's only 82 games for visible bruising, as you said. Right. In some ways, that feels not enough.
I agree. All right, so, hey, I'm sort of part two to this question. So neither of us want him, but do you think the Braves will release him before he ever steps back on the field? Right? They're going to – so, right?
This is one of those
defining moments. The Braves
owe him
like $32 million or something.
This is a defining moment for the front office, for Terry McGuirk and everyone down the line. So on one hand, they owe him this $32 million. They are essentially faced with throwing away Alex Wood and Jose Peraza.
Right.
Right.
And the return.
And the return.
Do.
Or, so that's the one thing is like, that's just gone. That's just gone. But, or they, you know, they bring him back on and they stick with someone who did what he did. And it's a big decision for the front office. And I, you know, and like I sort of alluded to with the Terry McGuirk thing, they certainly couldn't have planned for this. This leaves him in such a hole. I mean, a very bad situation. What a tough choice to have to make. Like, I mean, obviously Oliver wasn't the thing that was going to make the Braves better this year,
but he was phase one.
He was certainly a piece of the future. He was phase one
of the offense.
Absolutely. And so, I mean,
so Hammy, stop.
I can't say what I would
stop
do in
being
this situation.
Wishy-washy.
I can't say, but I'd say fair. I say he never steps on the plate again. And it's more, I guess I'm hoping fair.
Yeah. I think the Braves release him too.
Yeah.
I think that with all the bad press going on and the losing, and especially all the losing at home, like putting his face up on the giant screen and introducing him, I just can't see it. I think that they release him
again, though, to your earlier point, if he'd hit 7 homers this year, it's a different
it'd be a totally different conversation. Yeah, in the front office.
He's a one and a half years in and he's hitting over 300, different conversation.
Absolutely. All right, so Hammy, Julio Teheran has a .63 ERA in 4 games with Tyler Flowers behind the plate.
Yep.
And heading into today's game, today's Sunday game with AJ, he has a .419 ERA with 6 games with AJ. So AJ was behind the plate today.
Mm-hmm.
One potential reason for that is that AJ is 8-for-17 with 2 homers heading into today's game against Tom Kohler, who started for the Marlins. So, Ham, fair or foul, it was the right move to put AJ in today instead of Flowers.
It felt like an echo of Freddie.
You mean like running out of relievers earlier this week, for example?
Yes.
I mean, come on, man. Oh, my God.
He's still here. But, you know, for me, Teheran is the second best player on your team, right? And for you to win, if for your team to excel, your best players have to excel. So Teheran pitching at home, you should do every single thing you can to support him. You should roll the red carpet out. You should put furry slippers on him, whatever, so he dominates. And if you know these numbers, you don't choose. It's like picking a bad matchup. It's just you don't do that. You give Teheran everything he needs so that he could potentially throw a no-hitter, which I believe he has in him. And you just don't screw with that for AJ. I mean, no offense to AJ, but AJ is not the reason you're going to win a baseball game.
Well, so I agree with everything you said. And what I'll add to it is at 21 games under .500, let's stop pretending that anything is about this season anymore. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like everything has got to be about the future. And Teheran, whether it's because he's a foundational piece to your starting pitching, which he should be, or because you want him to keep killing it and sell high and trade him for some offensive pieces at the trade deadline. I know, but it's in play.
Yep.
Toppy came out this week with Ken Rosenthal and was like, we're not looking, but if we get blown away, hint, hint, for sale sign out front, Julio for sale. You do everything you can for the future, and AJ is not the future, and sweeping the Marlins is not going to bring a bunch of people into the stands the rest of the season.
Yeah.
It's not going to help anything. And AJ's not going to be here next year. Tyler Flowers might be here next year, actually. So it doesn't even make sense in that way. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Agreed. Foul.
Foul. All right, Hammy. Up next is Shot in the Dark, but first, a quick break. All right, so Ham, let's check in on how we did last week, starting with our listener, Holy City Andre, his God-given name, who predicted that the Braves would hit more home runs than their opponents this week and still have a losing record. Unfortunately, he got half of that right.
Yes. The
not so good part. Yep. The Braves did have a losing record this week. They also hit 3 home runs to their opponents' 5. So close but no cigar, Andre.
Which may be one of the best showings we've had in that category, in that regard, all season.
3 home runs in the week.
5 against 3, losing 5-3 in the homer category. It feels like our best week yet.
Yeah, I hear you.
I don't have the numbers to back that up.
So let's just throw that stuff out.
Yes, exactly. Fact.
All right, so Ham, let's check in on the three of us. So I predicted that Eric O'Flaherty would be released this week. Now, since he pitched today, I think I was wrong. He started the week with 2 clean appearances.
Yep.
He pitched a third and then 2/3 of an inning. No runs, no walks, had a strikeout. And then today he imploded, giving up 3 earned in 2/3 of an inning. Kurt had Darnold batting over .325. He batted only .230. Mm. And Hammy, you had Tehran pitching 15 1/3, giving up 3 earned runs total across his 2 starts. And the Braves having a winning record.
Yeah, it was just a little audacious.
Yeah, well, he pitched 12 1/3 and gave up 4 total. And the Braves had a losing record. So no one wins this week. Ham, you and Kurt tie for the month of May with 1 right week apiece. And now it's time to move on to June. So we'll start with Kurt, who had to write his in. He has Frenchie going, hitting over .325 with 1 home run and 4 RBI. Hammy, how about
you? Isn't that crazy? Frenchie.
Frenchie's, yeah, it is crazy.
It's awesome.
DOB had a great blog about everything he's doing this year. It's real good.
That's good. So Folty has 2 starts this week, I believe, and one of them he will go 7 or more and give up 1 run or less. And in the other one, the Hyde one or the Jekyll one, he will go 4 or less. Pitch 4 or less and give up more than 4 runs.
Okay, all right. The up and down of the
Jekyll and Hyde rookie
starting pitcher, yeah. All right, and I predict that the Braves are going to win the Kershaw game in L.A. this coming week. Now, the subsection of that is that we hit a line drive off his knee in the first pitch.
The first pitch.
Exactly. All right, folks, don't forget to send in your Shot in the Dark prediction before first pitch on Monday. It's a holiday, people. Don't waste time. Get them in. And we will pick one and discuss it on next week's show. So, Hammy, let's look ahead to next week and our predictions. First, we'll quickly look back at last week in our predictions. So on this 2-4 week, I was closest with my 3-3 prediction. Hammy, you and Kurt were far off. Insane at 4-2.
In hindsight, what a horrible week.
I mean,
the Marlins
Milwaukee
series
was bad. I mean, Milwaukee was finally like, you know, a sub-500 team coming in that we should, you know, not be embarrassed by.
And Ryan Braun.
I know. What, 2 homers in the series?
Us. It just felt like he was on base every time I turned on the TV. Yeah, he killed us.
Terrible sweep. In a terrible season.
Yeah.
That was a terrible sweep.
Indeed.
All right, so Ham, in the upcoming week, we've got 7 games, 4 at home with the Giants and 3 at the Dodgers. Nice and easy this week.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's look at the pitching matchup. So in the Giants series, it's Folty versus Samardzija, his .254 ERA.
Oh, the Giants are – there's Bumgarner, Cueto, they're all on fire.
Yep. Next up, except for – Whistler's opponent, Jake Peavy, with his 7.26 ERA. Who is the Milwaukee guy with the 6.99 ERA who dominated us in the third game of the series? I can't think of his name. It was the one guy you'd heard of that we talked about last week. Willie Peralta.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, with his 6.99. So Peavy's 7.26, probably not as important in the grand scheme of things.
You should take off four for the Braves.
Yeah, exactly. The third game will be Williams-Perez versus to be announced. They haven't announced that starter. And then we finish up the week. It's a businessman special. Aaron Blair, who had a very nice bounce back, by the way, on Saturday.
Indeed.
He faces Bumgarner and his ridiculous 2.12 ERA.
And he's 8-1? I think.
Well,
I think Cueto, Smarja, if that's how you say it, and Bumgarner all have one loss and all over 7 wins or something like that. Or 7-2, maybe. I forget. They're just dominating. And all under 2.54 or something ERA.
Lovely.
Yeah.
So on to LA. Yeah. The Dodgers series, where it'll be Tehran versus Kershaw and his even more ridiculous ERA at 1.44.
He's good.
He's good. Yep. He's pretty good.
Yep.
Next up, Folty versus old friend Alex Wood, who's had an up and down year. He's at 4.03. And then the week ends with Whistler again versus Scott Kazmir and his 4.84. So, Ham, Kurt's predicting 2-5 this week.
Mm-hmm.
How about you?
Yeah, me too. 1-3, 1-2. I think we beat TBD.
Yeah, hey.
That's our only hope against the Giants is you don't know who you're going against.
I'm going to go 1-6, and the one game is the Kershaw game.
Whoa, that's right.
Yeah.
When we hit him in the head on the first pitch.
Exactly. But just – and he just, you know – just for precautionary measures, he has to leave the game, but he's totally fine.
Yeah, exactly. It's totally fine.
Let's be clear. All right, Hammy, that is the show. Everyone, have a great Memorial Day, by the way. And please remember that we're at our new home of Blog Talk Radio, as well, as always, at iTunes and Stitcher. You can find us at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com as well to access all of our past shows, to check out our blogs, and to post in our comments section. And be sure to follow us on Twitter at ATL Baseball Talk and to like us on Facebook. Thanks again for listening, everyone, and go Braves!
Thanks for listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves. To find new shows, to post in our forum, or to send a comment, please visit us at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com.